Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
The books children read, have they changed? Are we expecting as much out of children's literature today as we did in the late 1800s, early 1900s? Can children read as well now as then? If not, why? Did the destruction of phonics teaching play a role in this? Or is it the lack of funds, as so many education advocates claim? Or is there something else beyond phonics? Is there something deeper, more insidious? No one can deny there's too many references to body functions, too much vulgarity and sexual scenarios included in children and young teen literature. Today we're going to look into how children's literature has changed over the years, the last 100 years specifically, and my guest is Debbie DeGroff. She's the author of Between the Covers, What's Inside a Children's Book, which I strongly encourage our listeners to get a copy of this. Thanks, Debbie, for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate that, Diane.
So why did you feel the need to write this book, which has like almost 1,000 endnotes, so it's a well-documented piece of literature?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I never wanted to write a book. I just started seeing such a shift in children's literature over 30 years ago when my oldest child was beginning to read, and we were going to the library and trying to get books, and I started reading them. And so it was just a matter of I kept asking myself questions. Mm-hmm. You know, why is this this way? Why is this this way? And as I kept looking and going down all the rabbit holes through the years, I just noticed a lot of things that I wanted. Basically, I thought parents would want to know. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept researching and trying to talk to people. And I found that parents, for the most part, they're so busy today mm-hmm. that they do not want to read what their children are reading. So as a result, they're unaware of the content of children's books. So I know we're not going to talk about the content today, but what we are going to talk about is really a prerequisite to talking about the content at a later time.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have you on again to talk about the content. But I was shocked when I was reading the first three chapters in the book, just how literature has changed. And I thought the whole phonics debate really started like in the 60s, but it looks like, from what I've read, that it started even prior to that. Yeah. And as a result, we saw a change in children's literature even back in the early 1900s, but sort of beginning right then as far as taking children away from the learning of phonics, learning how to sound words out phonetically. Am I right in that? It started before the 60s?
It actually, it was tried earlier, but okay. It really didn't become commonplace till around 1930.
Still, that's early.
Primer was published in 1927.
Okay. And what was that was published in 27?
My earliest pre-primer that was word guessing.
Okay.
That did not use phonics is 1927. Okay.
And did they actually call it word guessing back then?
No.
Okay.
No, they did not.
that'd give away their scheme, I think, if they used that terminology. But it was like sight words. Was that what it was?
Yes.
Where kids just saw a word?
Most people listening are probably familiar with Dick and Jane.
Oh,
and
of course,
definitely. You had beautiful illustrations of the children.
Uh-huh.
But you had look, see, jump, jump, mm-hmm. you know.
See dog run, see spot run. Absolutely. I remember him very well.
right. So my first reader was the Reading for Meaning series by Paul McKee.
Uh-huh.
And the first pre-primer was Tip. And in that book, it actually said, and I'm going to quote from the teacher's manual.
Okay.
Since vowel sound associations are comparatively unreliable and generally unnecessary clues to the identity of a strange printed word, these are introduced only in the second grade materials at a time when pupils will already have a firm mastery of the basic word attack technique. So the 20 words in that first pre-primer, Tip, no, here come, Jackie is not with me, Janet, find home, go, the ball, will you, I, and play are going to be
there.
Learned without any knowledge of a vowel sound.
So the teaching of even the basic vowels, that was not something that was encouraged, A, E, I, O, U.
Not in the series that I had.
Right.
And it was word recognition all the way. For example, in the Gin readers from the late 40s to early 50s, in the first set of pre-primers, which there were three of them, one of the first words in the first pre-primer was airplane. Up and not were not learned until the third pre-primer.
The word up, U-P, was not, but they were expecting to learn airplane?
Yes.
But up was not.
Okay, and that shows you it was easier to recognize airplane.
Okay.
You had pictures,
okay. And
you also have the P going below the line,
okay.
And the L going above the line.
So the shape of the word.
Which made it look, not ordinary.
Distinctive, okay.
So it was easier to learn. But in saying that up and not learned till the third pre-primer, that makes it clear that they were not learning phonetically.
Right, for sure, because up means two letters.
Yes.
Not
well,
three
and
letters.
You had your short vowel sound.
Right, you're right.
So it wasn't, the alarm really wasn't sounded until 1955 when Rudolf Flesch wrote his famous book, Why Johnny Can't Read.
Okay. So that's when it was kind of exposed. But
right.
looking at the children back in, say, the late 1800s, early 1900s, what was their typical literature like? I mean, as far as, did they read classics, what we consider classics nowadays?
Yes. I have a large collection of the St. Nicholas magazine.
Uh-huh.
And Mary Mapes Dodge, of course, was the editor of that magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, a lot of your famous authors had stories in that book, and they appeared as a serial. Like, they may have the first three chapters in one month and then go on to the next three chapters in the next book.
Mm-hmm. Okay, famous authors like?
They had stories from, say, Frank Stockton, I think Mark Twain.
Okay.
Even Laura Ingalls Wilder. You had Frances Hodges Burnett.
Uh-huh.
Many authors.
But this was a children's magazine, though.
It was, but they had a contest. This
okay.
is what's striking. They had a contest where the kids were supposed to turn in the most favored books for children. I think it was from the ages of 10 to 16.
Uh-huh.
And here you had Thackeray, Dickens, the works of Sir Walter Scott, etc. And all of these books were read for pleasure.
Wow.
Now, keep in mind, they did not have television
right,
then.
Or an iPad or video games or...
Right. I mean, Swiss Family Robinson. And now, Ivanhoe is listed on Accelerated Reader at a 12th grade, 9th month reading level.
12th grade? It's what it's listed as now? And
yes,
back
it's
then?
Listed at a 12th grade, 9th grade reading level.
And the contest that you were referring to was for 10th to... 10-year-olds to 16-year-olds.
Yes, 10 years old to 16.
And that was one of their favorite books to read for pleasure.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, and you have, I have a book from 1908 that's probably for, written for parents and teachers.
Uh-huh.
But the person who wrote that book, put a little introductory between each passage she had that she thought children should know.
Right.
And one of the things that I thought was very, very striking is she talks about Patrick Henry's speech,
okay.
and that most businessmen alive had memorized that as a boy, and it was their favorite speech. And today, the children barely know that Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me
exactly.
death.
Exactly, and they think that's the whole speech.
Yes, but that was the end of a lengthy speech called The War is Inevitable.
Why do you think memorization is definitely downplayed nowadays? Why do you think that is? I mean, this is kind of off topic of phonics, but why do you think memorization is downplayed?
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of reasons, and people more, that have more expertise than I, could probably address that. One of the things that I have noticed, though, when you memorize poetry or speeches or Bible verses, or passages, mm-hmm. you learn how to speak fluently. You're okay. articulate.
Okay.
You learn the right intonation when you're speaking. And if you listen to children today who have very, very little memorization of things like that, when they read, it's very broken.
It's actually
hard to listen to.
Right, yeah.
I associate that with Chinese torture treatment.
Okay. That's good. Yes, I've heard our grandchildren read like that on occasion. Yes, for sure. So, you know, we have this whole situation where, of course, books now are being, you know, you get an e-book or you have a computer screen or you have the TV or... especially with competition for reading, you have the TV and the iPad and video games and such. Those are all competing for children's time, unfortunately. So books are being, the reading of books is being basically set aside and not being emphasized, which is, you know, it's just tragic. I mean, how can a nation survive if its citizens or future leaders can't read well? And when parents look at tests, you know, the kids that are, children have like assessment tests and stuff, and they're getting given some kind of a score as far as a reading score. What is that, and how does that confuse parents or mislead parents as far as what, you know, what their child's reading level is?
Well, a lot of the tests that the children take or assessments, they're given a what is called a Lexile score from the Lexile framework of reading. And that supposedly assesses what level they are reading,
mm-hmm.
okay? So, for example, a 420 to 820 L might be a second to third grade reading level. Now, Accelerated Reader also, now, they don't give you a score, you know, from your assessments, but they also do reading levels. And theirs are a little more clear cut.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if it says 3.2 reading level, that means your child is on a third grade, second month reading
okay.
level.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we need to talk about, what are these reading levels? And I think a good illustration goes to the Boxcar Children,
mm-hmm.
because this is something that your listeners can readily look up. They do not have to take my word for this at all. They can go to Project Gutenberg online,
mm-hmm.
and just put in the search bar, Boxcar Children. And what they're going to see is a 1924 first version of the Boxcar Children that Gertrude Chandler Warner wrote.
Mm-hmm.
In 1942, she was asked to rewrite the book, to revise it, and the revision went along with this new controlled vocabulary that came with the Look-Say method of teaching reading in which they had thrown out phonics.
Okay.
Okay, now what's interesting that I would like to bring up here is, number one, in the original book, for children of that same age, there were words like conquering, delegated, delicatessen, energetically, vigorously, harmonious, rapturous, and the kids at that time, in 1924, could read those words.
Wow.
By 1942, none of those words were in there.
None of them.
Okay, but what, yeah, all of those words were removed, okay? But I have an old edition of Surprise Island, which was the second book.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, I have one that's old enough in the back, it tells you it's a controlled vocabulary. But it also goes on to say that it has less of a word load or a vocabulary load than the basic second grade basal readers.
Than the second grade
basal? Second grade. Now, what's interesting, if you take that edition of Surprise Island and look it up on Accelerated Reader, it's listed at a fourth grade second month reading level, I believe. Yes,
you're kidding.
Fourth grade second month.
Although the book itself says it's second grade.
Yes.
But Accelerated
Reader. No, it doesn't say that in your new copy.
Well, no, but the original one. So,
yes.
But was it, so 1924 was when the original Boxcar Children came out.
Yes.
And then it was rewritten by the same author in 1940 using controlled vocabulary.
Yes. So we could sit here and say that this edition of the Boxcar Children and Surprise Island were dumbed down, so
mm-hmm.
to speak, compared to the 1924.
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
In your book, you have the first paragraph of the 1924 edition, and it's 5.5 lines long.
Yes.
And then you have the first paragraph of the Boxcar Children from the rewritten 1950 Scott Forman's edition, and it is 1.25 lines. It was the same paragraph.
Right.
Same paragraph. And I've read the Boxcar Children to our kids when they were little. I read probably most of the series. And that series did not, there was no dad ever mentioned in the series that I read to our kids. But this first paragraph, the 1924 book, talks about the dad. Just the first paragraph. And
yeah,
what have they done?
I want to bring up, we are not talking about, you know, that the Boxcar Children are bad.
Right, exactly.
We're talking about is the levels shifted.
Uh-huh.
What happened between 1924 and 1942?
Yeah.
And, of course, the biggest culprit we can see is that phonics was thrown out,
mm-hmm.
and a controlled vocabulary, your basal readers,
yeah.
was put into place.
Okay, what's a controlled vocabulary? What is a controlled vocabulary?
Well, a controlled vocabulary, I have several hundred antique children's readers,
mm-hmm.
okay? So you start reading them, and in the back of them, it will tell you, you know, there's, you know, 200 words in, say, this reader, okay? And they'll tell you 93% of them align with the Gates list or the Thorndike list,
mm-hmm.
you know, so on. Each one of those books tells you that information back then. Well, what happened when you started this, if you grew up in Florida and I grew up, say, in New York, but we both moved to Ohio next year,
mm-hmm.
if you learned a different set of words through your first and second grade than I learned, and we got to Ohio, see, it was necessary that we had the same words we were familiar with before we moved
okay.
on to the third grade.
Okay.
So therefore, they started becoming, you know, more as one.
Right, right. So
yes.
The same thing was expected as far as reading, especially the same thing was expected of all students to know certain words at certain ages or certain grades.
Yes.
Is that pretty much it?
Before we lose sight of the Boxcar Children, I also want to tell you, when we're talking about Surprise Island,
mm-hmm.
and I told you that in the back of the old one, it says that it has an easier load than a second grade reader,
yeah.
okay? But yet, it's listed now as being at a fourth grade, second month reading level. Now, however, you have a comic book form of Surprise Island.
Oh.
And it's listed at a second grade, eighth month reading level, which is higher
than the
first dumbed-down
right.
version was.
Right. Wow. Now, there was one quote about, well, let's briefly talk about the introduction of series books like The Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew and such as that.
Well, Edward Stratemeyer started his Stratemeyer Syndicate in the early 1900s. Prior to that, he had written The Rover Boys in the late 1880s, I
mm-hmm.
believe, and that sold 5 million copies.
Wow, for back
then, there was over 100 series eventually.
Wow.
But in 1904, the Bobbsey twins that people are familiar with,
uh-huh.
and then, of course, Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys came later. You know, there was Tom Swift, Happy Hollisters, lots of them that people
right.
remember. But many librarians would not even shelve these series books at that time.
Why?
Because it was such a contrast between the type of literature that the children were used to reading, that they were capable of reading.
Like such as Charles Dickens and
yes.
James Fenimore Cooper, et cetera. Okay.
Yes. See, even in the book I quoted before, where the woman talked about that the students always learned Patrick Henry's speech.
Mm-hmm.
She also talks about at 13 or 14, myself and classmates were obliged to commit to memory the constitutions of the United States, all of it.
All the whole thing.
Of course, it only went to Article 15 at that time.
Yeah, but still.
But yes, they memorized it word per word.
Wow.
And now we're losing our country because we don't even know what our Constitution says.
And that includes elected officials as far as not knowing what the Constitution says.
Yes.
Well, we could. I just want to read real quick. Dr. Seuss. You know, we all know he wrote the Cat in the Hat books.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a quote from him, because he was given 223 different words to use in the creation of this book. And he was interviewed by Samuel Blumenfeld in
Arizona. Blumenfeld quoted him.
Okay.
Dr. Seuss did an interview with Arizona Magazine.
Okay. Thanks for correcting me. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, this is Dr. Seuss's quote. I did it as far as using the controlled vocabulary. I did it for a textbook house, and they sent me a word list. That was due to the Dewey Revolt in the 20s. Of course, that's John Dewey Revolt in the 20s, in which they threw out phonic reading and went to word recognition as if you're reading a Chinese pictograph instead of blending sounds of different letters. I think killing phonics was one of the greatest causes of illiteracy in the country. Unquote. Now, that's Dr. Seuss. And so he recognized the danger of killing phonics. I mean, his wording.
Well, he recognized it later in life.
Well, true. Yeah, later. Right. Because he saw what was happening with the children's reading and such as that. So we could go on and on about this. How can folks, and I'm definitely going to have you on to talk about this some more, because it's definitely information that'll take up more than one program. But how can folks get your book?
On my website.
Get this book. You need this book. Even if you don't have kids in school, your taxpayer dollars are paying for this stuff. What's inside children's books?
Just like
the subtitle of your book. What's inside childrensbooks.com. What's inside childrensbooks.com. And get a copy of this book. And even the first three chapters, as I've been going through it, I mean, it's just astounding to me how literature is changed in children's books, and we don't know it. We don't recognize it. So thanks so much, Debbie, for being with us. I really, really appreciate it. And, hey, write another book. I'll read it.
Thank you for having me,
okay.
Diane.
You take care. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.